This talk was recorded by Insight Meditation South Bay in Mountain View, California. For more talks and information, visit www.imsb.org.
Well, it's my real honor to be here tonight and to be talking about one of the eight great thoughts, which is on mindfulness. So mindfulness, you know, what is mindfulness? It's more than anything, it's really about awareness. And it's being awake and alive to the present moment, to be, you know, open to ourselves and really present with what's happening, so that we can fully inhabit the experience of life and the experience of being ourselves. So there's many definitions of mindfulness. One of them, by Jon Kabat-Zinn, says that mindfulness is awareness brought about by paying attention in a certain way, in a particular way, to the present moment, non-judgmentally. So what does this exactly mean? It's first of all, noticing when we are falling into the past or the future. We oftentimes get into a kind of a rehashing of the past or a rehearsing of the future, and we forget where we are. We also forget who we are. And so bringing our attention into the present moment is the only place where really it's happening. And when it's about paying attention in a particular way, it's looking at experiencing through the lens of non-judgment. So we oftentimes will get into this very conditioned habit of experiencing what we like and what we don't like, and so very much categorizing life into this sort of evaluative place of this is good, this is bad, success, failure, right, wrong. And when we experience life through this filter, it really keeps us from being fully present to our senses, to the experience of walking down the street and seeing the trees and feeling the sunshine, and or when we're washing dishes, really just even knowing that we're washing dishes and seeing the dishes getting clean and the water on our hands as the suds and the, you know, dishes are getting washed up. So another definition of mindfulness that I really like is by Sylvia Boorstein. And she says, mindfulness is the aware, balanced acceptance of the present experience. It isn't more complicated than that. It's opening to or receiving the present moment, pleasant or unpleasant, just as it is, without either clinging to it or rejecting it. So it breaks this tendency to categorize our experience and fall into these places of basically rejecting what's happening, or, you know, either clinging to it so hard that we, you know, we need this because it's just so absolutely important that we get what we want and that we don't get what we don't want. So mindfulness is also considered the heart of Buddhist psychology or the heart of insight meditation. And it's one of the factors on the Eightfold Path. It's right mindfulness or wise mindfulness. And when you look at what right or wise mindfulness is, it's the intentional process. It's the attention and the intention that we bring to the present experience. It's investigating it so that we can look into what's happening without getting caught by our feelings and our thoughts. And it's also bringing in an attitude of compassion so that we can hold our experience and the difficult emotions that go with it, as well as cultivating all these other qualities, like having an attitude of curiosity so that we can bring a kind of neutral attention stay interested and awake and alive to this process so that we can say yes to life and be curious and interested in what's happening. So mindfulness also leads to insight, and it leads to insight by looking at what the Buddha talked about as the three basic truths of reality, that there is suffering, that that life is impermanent, everything is constantly changing, and this concept of the no self, that rather than us being a fixed kind of solid self based on who we are, our ego, which is more of our assumptions about who we believe ourself to be or who we should be, that we actually are this kind of ever flow of experience, this kind of no self, no solid self. So mindfulness gives us the capacity to see clearly and develop the insight into these ways that we get tripped up, and noticing that we're resisting what life tends to bring us. So there's this quote by Eleanor Roosevelt, and what she says is, yesterday is history, the future is a mystery, today is a gift. That's why we call it the present. So mindfulness gives us the present moment, and I thought what I would do is kind of unpack mindfulness through, you know, how do we enter into the present moment, mainly looking at the foundations of breath and the body to anchor us and to ground us to the present, and how we work with thoughts and emotions, how we're able to investigate the experience, and then how we're able to develop insight through understanding these different ways that we get caught. So I think of a couple of foundational practices to mindfulness, the breath and the body. So if you notice that most meditations in this tradition, insight meditation tradition, and by the way, insight is vipassana. It means clear seeing. And as I said, mindfulness is at the heart of insight meditation because it leads to insight. So we enter the present moment by anchoring to the breath. And the breath is always with us, and it's always accessible. So in the meditations, typically the beginning meditation and the meditations that you can stay with all along is by having our object of attention on the breath. And so what happens when we do this in the meditation? There's so much. It's the meditation is like the practice ground for living. It's the vehicle. In a short amount of time, we learn so much, and we can cultivate so many qualities that bring us on this path. So as we're learning to pay attention to the breath, we also bring our intention to stay with the breath. So that capacity to have attention and intention is very... that's what's bringing us into the present moment and is allowing us to stay there. And so one of the things that happens is that we're learning how to keep coming back, because the mind does have a habit of wandering, even with our best intentions. And so mindfulness gives us this gift of beginning anew. So every moment is this new beginning. AA next door, we'll talk about like one day at a time, and mindfulness says one moment at a time. So you can always, you know, if you feel like you're getting lost, then it's this practice of, okay, you notice that the mind has wandered, you label that as just thinking, and then you're applying this neutral attention, this non-judgmental awareness to just, okay, note that you've gone, and then you just keep coming back. So you also develop a variety of qualities in this process. One I was just talking about, the non-judgment. Another one is patience. So patience, you know, is it's actually seen as a form of wisdom, because patience allows us to know that everything changes, and that it just sort of allows us to go with the unfolding nature of life. And so as we just stay with the breath and get into paying attention to the subtleties of the breath sensations, we develop a patience to just stay with what's present, because we're so oriented now to all this action and all this kind of vividness. And so when we can be with the subtleties of life, we can be much more in tune with just being able to stay right here. We're also training the brain. So there's been all this research on mindfulness. And what it's showing is that mindfulness, it actually changes like the structure and the function of the brain. There was this one study that looked at mindfulness-based stress reduction and put half of the employees in a high-tech firm in a MBSR group, and then the other half in weightless control. But everyone's brain was scanned beforehand, and it was tipped to the right, which is where more of the positive or negative emotions reside, in that kind of the right brain hemisphere side of the brain. And then after the first group went through MBSR, brains were scanned again, and that group was tipped to the left, where more positive emotions reside, and the weightless control group stayed over to the right. The other thing that it showed was that everyone got a flu shot beforehand, and the antibody levels were checked 8 weeks later, and there was a higher presence of antibodies, so that the immune system also improved, and that the structure and the function of the brain actually changed in an 8-week period. So it's training the brain to stay where you intend your mind, your focus to be. And it's developing these different qualities, as I was saying, along with you can develop more compassion or altruism. Different meditations cultivate different things. The other quality that's so important is this quality of acceptance. And acceptance and mindfulness is really about being with what is. It's not trying to get anywhere other than into the present moment. So one of the things that John Lennon said was, life is what happens when you're busy making other plans. And so mindfulness just puts us in this place of just learning how to be with whatever is happening. So one of the things that I was saying in the meditation was that if the mind kind of wanders, or if you're hearing sound, there's no such thing as a good meditation or a bad meditation, because this is really about like cultivating non-judgment. And you just get to keep on practicing, coming back, and you get to just be with what's happening. So even though we're placing our primary attention on the breath, there's this whole other world that's existing. So it's, you know, it's also occurring, but we're not letting it take precedence. One of the things that I do when I go to the dentist, which I don't like doing, is when I'm getting my teeth drilled, I just put my attention right on the breath, so that, you know, it's not that I'm not aware of what's going on, but I'm putting my primary attention on the breath, and then the sound of the drill, and you know, the different experiences happening, but more of where I'm placing my attention is right here, you know, trying to kind of just breathe in and breathe out. So mindfulness brings us the formal practices through meditation, or it could be meditation and movement, walking meditation, it could also be like yoga, but also the informal practices. And so it brings our attention to the breath. And the breath is so important in everyday life, because we do have a habit of getting into this conditioned breathing, which is this short, shallow breathing from our chest. And this is what turns on this stress response. So oftentimes we're kind of in this low-grade kind of stress place a lot of the time because we're doing this shallow, short breathing. And we, you know, we need to have the stress response on sometimes, but it's not really helpful all the time. So it did help us become humans and stay on this planet because when the saber-toothed tiger was running, you know, we had the capacity to just like kind of stop our breathing actually and get into this fight or flight, in the case of the tiger, the flight reaction, and have that capacity to just be able to like run away without thinking about what we were doing, just, you know, get the adrenaline going and the cortisol and go at breakneck speed. But we have so many stressors in today's society that we have like these what I call demon tigers behind lots of bushes during the day, and the body can't distinguish between physiological and psychological danger. And so what we want to do is we want to be able to turn off that stress response with the breath, and so we have this antidote. We have the ability to turn on the relaxation response also with the breath, and that's through belly breathing. So when the breath goes all the way into the belly, our relaxation response turns on. And so one of the things mindfulness teaches us to do is to bring our attention to the breath. And as I was kind of saying before, the breath is always with us and available and accessible. So at any moment, if we feel stressed out during the day or if we just want to stay into this more relaxed, calm state, we can just bring our attention to just two or three deep breaths. So if we get into that short breathing, that gets us into this more me versus them kind of mentality. It's kind of me against the rest of the world. It's kind of very defensive. But that deep abdominal breath turns on this kind of we space so that we're much more about being able to feel connected to what's happening. So one of the things that I do in the groups I lead is I pass out kind of smaller versions of this piece of felt, which is shaped like a heart, and the practice is called the felt practice, and it's the acronym for feel every loving touch. Loving touch meaning the breath, and feel the breath. So one of the things that you might think of doing is to just remember to get into the breath and that belly breathing, that conscious, very aware kind of breathing. I also wanted to talk a little bit about intention. So intention, as we're in the meditation, was a very important aspect because it was bringing your intention to stay with the breath. Well, in life, we also want to bring intention into our actions. So just like a farmer chooses what seeds they're going to plant because they want a rose or lettuce in the garden or whatever it is, in mindfulness, intentions are often talked about as seeds. So what they say is that your future well-being is influenced by the intentions that you nurture. So if you plant the seed of anger, then what's going to sprout from that would be hatred. If you plant the seed of kindness, what will sprout from that is love and compassion. And so it's so much about knowing what intentions you want to plant so that could influence your future well-being. So we move now to the body. We get into grounding to the present moment through the body. So mindfulness is talked about as an embodied practice, and it is because we tune into the body. We have thoughts, we have emotions, we have experience. We tune into how is the body responding to this. And so, like, when you do meditation on the body, what you're focusing on is the feelings of the body sensations as they're moving through the body. So, like right now, you might notice, if you bring your attention to the body, that, you know, you're going to feel a certain sensation here or there. And if you, like, breathe into and out from these sensations, you might notice that the sensations will kind of have more room to sort of spread out. Oftentimes, if we tense up, that increases the sensation. So if we just, you know, either breathe into or out from these sensations, or just, you know, imagine putting your attention right into, you know, turning towards the sensations, that they'll have kind of room to spread out, or they'll just simply be. So acknowledging what's there without trying to change it, but just noticing what's there, will actually just sort of loosen and relieve and give us the space that will just have our tension just spread out and dissolve, or just simply be, because it's the resistance around it that makes for so much more distress or dis-ease. So if we look at how the body grounds us to the present moment in meditation, it's through the postures that I was talking about also in the meditation, and noticing that our posture is kind of that place where we can get right in that really kind of that soft place between alertness and relaxation. It's that kind of equipoise that between surrender and effort. And so when I also asked you at the beginning of the meditation, you know, do you want to have a lot of guided meditation or, you know, not very much? And there was sort of like everywhere in between. I think it was Paul that said, you know, we'll just do the middle path here. So much of mindfulness is finding that middle path, that place where, you know, we get into this trying to fix it. We want to try to change how we feel because we're looking for comfort. We want to feel this pleasantness. And we don't want to feel the unpleasantness. And so mindfulness, you know, has us notice that, oh, we're tipped over here. We really want to get over here, but, you know, but it's like, okay, well, that's really just what's happening right now. So sort of just making room for it, being with it, and acknowledging it without trying to change it. So there's this this acronym that mindfulness-based stress reduction uses. Is called STOP. And it's based on something that's very important in mindfulness called the pause. Every kind of mindfulness has three components to it when it's applied. So first of all, it's, you know, you're going about in daily life and you stop and then you observe what's happening. So in this observation, you're pausing to be aware of what your thoughts are, what your emotions are, what's happening in your body, so that you can be present. And then the third part is the return, returning to that mindful state of being. So the STOP acronym in MBSR is, you know, just say that you're at a stoplight, and which is a perfect place to practice a stop. So you say, okay, this is a time to get into this informal mindfulness practice stop. So you stop. And T is take a breath. So this is where you get into the, you know, two or three belly breaths. And it's just using the breath to just, you know, kind of turn off that stress response and just fully, you know, get the oxygen going and the blood flow. And then the O is observe. So in this very short amount of time that you're at the stoplight, you're observing your thought. So, you know, I don't know if I'm going to get to where I'm going on time. I'm going to be late. So you just notice the thinking. And then you notice what you're feeling. Oh, frustration, agitation, impatience, because you don't think that you're going to, you know, this is kind of hanging you up for the next 2 to 3 minutes. But you just notice the impatience or whatever it is that you're feeling. And then you go into your body. So what body sensations are you feeling? Well, you might be, you know, holding on to the steering wheel real tightly. And so you're noticing, oh, okay, you know, tight fingers, fist here. So you kind of loosen up. You notice that your back is kind of hurting. So you, you know, you kind of straighten up. Notice that you're not breathing, you know, that much, or that you have kind of tension, you know, in your chest. And so you sort of like open it up or, you know, move your shoulders around. And so basically you're doing the work in the body. And within a short amount of time, the light is going to turn green. And that's when you do the P, proceed, and bring the rest of the trip with you in this mindful way of being. So just remember, stop, take a breath, observe thoughts, emotions, body sensations, and then proceed out of this mindful way of being. Oh, and I did bring, to kind of help you remember, a little stop sign. The other thing about the body is that the body is more reliable than our thoughts, because thoughts weave stories that aren't true. And it's a storehouse of our feelings, and our feelings are really physiological states, but we tend to have thoughts that are very seductive, and our feelings are so intense that they confirm that our thoughts are true, but really it's this whole story that's taking over. And so if we bring ourselves into our body, we can work with our sensations there. And there's a metaphor about salt in the pond that's oftentimes used for thoughts and how to work with thoughts and emotions. So if you pour a teaspoon of salt in a little cup, you taste it, it's very salty. If you pour it in like a pot, it's salty, but not quite so much. But if you pour it in a pond and you taste the water in the pond, you don't taste any salt at all. So this is a metaphor about emotions or thoughts. So like salt in a pond, distressing emotions or disturbing thoughts dissolve in the spaciousness of a spacious mind and an open heart. So the body is always, you know, just remember that you have a large container and that it can hold it all. It's like the sky can hold all things. And so we have a big container, and it's about giving room for emotions to be. Emotions aren't seen as good or bad. Again, this would be, you know, evaluating, judging emotions to be bad or good. Emotions are seen as wholesome or unwholesome. And so it's looking at having wholesome emotions that lead to wholesome actions, and that unwholesome emotions lead to unwholesome actions. So it's being very aware of what your emotions are and giving them space. So the other piece of mindfulness that I talked about at the beginning was about investigation. And mindfulness gives us a way of working with our thoughts. So the basic premise in Buddhist psychology is that clinging causes suffering. So it's holding on to our thoughts tightly. And it's not so much the thoughts that we have as much as it is how tightly we hold on to them that causes our suffering. And there's this story of the monkey and the coconut, how to catch a monkey that I'm sure most of you or some of you have at least heard of. And so what they do in India is they make a hole in a coconut the size of a monkey's hand, put a banana inside. Monkey comes along and gets the banana and can't get their hand out because the banana is too big. So the hole is only this big, and they won't let go of the banana. And so the hunters just go by and get the monkey just with their hand in the coconut. And so this is the metaphor for, you know, what gets us into trouble is just holding on to these thoughts as though they're just dear life. When we apply mindfulness, what we want to do is we want to look at our relationship to what's happening. So it's not so much trying to change the situation, but change the relationship to the situation. I talk a lot when I do these fertility groups to, you know, it's like you can't change the situation of infertility, but you can change how you're relating to it. And if people are relating to it like, you know, I wish this wasn't happening, this isn't fair, why me, you know, I'll never have a child, I'm so angry about this. I feel so frustrated. I could go on and on with this, but it's not trying to change that situation. It's doing whatever you can to optimize your chances, but it's changing how you're relating to it. And so we if you're relating to it with holding on to resentment or frustration or anger or whatever it is, that makes it so much harder to then work with it. So, you know, it's whatever is happening, you pay more attention to how you're working with it. I went to a 10-day retreat with Jon Kabat-Zinn, and so people would say, well, this is what was happening when I was meditating. And so Jon said, well, he never asked sort of like, there were no kind of why questions. It was, well, how? You know, so how did you work with it? And so, you know, you'd say how you, and then what did you do? So, you know, it's you're looking at how you're relating to what's happening. And so it's changing your relationship, and that's what makes all the difference. There's this saying that I've heard of, stress used to have me in its grip, and now I have stress in my grip, and I can let it go. So one of the things that you might also try to remember is just this, that you can, let go of stress. You can let go of whatever it is that you have. You can let go of your hold on it. You can let go of the banana, in a sense, and get out or move through the situation. So also, mindfulness gives us a way of looking at thoughts from this neutral perspective. It's that they're mental formations. So one of the meditations that you can do in mindfulness is you can have the object of attention being the breath, like what we did tonight. You can have the object being the body. And then you can have the object of attention being thoughts. So oftentimes if you learn, and if you take some of the classes that we offer here at Insight Meditation Centers, you'll change the object of attention from the breath one week, the next week the body, emotions, thoughts, and then quality of attention. And so thoughts are really seen as mental formations. They're like clouds passing through the sky. And it's about like not seeing the thought as like I am the thought. So It's witnessing the thoughts as events, as opposed to identifying with thoughts. There's also the story of Buddha with the three arrows. So, you know, Buddha says to his students, how do you feel when an arrow strikes you? Oh, that's terrible. What about the second arrow? Oh, that's that much worse. How about the third? Oh, terrible. Just beyond. And so Buddha is saying the first arrow is unavoidable suffering. It's like life happening. But the second and the third arrow is what we do when we're struck by the arrow. If only I had gotten away. I should have known better. I'll never be able to work again. So it's this overlay of how we, you know, how we're relating to what's happening, that is optional suffering. Epictetus, the Greek philosopher, said, we're disturbed not so much by what happens to us, but by our thoughts about what happens. So our thoughts are very, very powerful. And, you know, they, as I was saying before, they create these stories which aren't true. And the problem is that we identify with the story. And so if you see these thoughts as not me, you know, that there are these mental formations, there's these, so that you can just, like, observe them. So in meditation, what happens is we have, when you get into the mindfulness of meditation on thoughts, you can learn the RAIN practice. So another acronym here. So if you're meditating, but you have this thought that just keeps on coming and you just can't focus on whatever object of attention you're trying to focus on, the breath or the body or sound or whatever it is, you apply the RAIN practice. So R is recognize the thought. So you just, you know, recognize the thought, and you might even want to put a kind of title to it. And sometimes it helps to put kind of a fun title, like if it could be recognizing that, oh, this is this inadequacy thought that I have. So it might be the little, oh, here it is, the little engine that couldn't. And so, you know, here it is. This is the little engine that couldn't. And then what emotion is behind that thought? So then you start investigating it. So that the R is recognize the thought. The A is, well, first of all, accept, acknowledge the thought. And then the I is investigate the thought. So what emotion is fueling the thought? Is there frustration behind it or whatever it is? What's the energy? You know, are you clinging to it? Are you being averse to it? So just get in touch with how, again, you're relating to the thought. And then what's happening in the body. So, you know, we can see the same thing that we did in the stop practice, which is, you know, we identify the thought, the emotion is connected to that thought, and then the body is that storehouse, and how is the body manifesting that thought. And so we get to know it, not in this way where we're personalizing it, but we, in a sense, say, you know, not like I am inadequate, but, oh, so this is what inadequacy feels like. Tight chest, or kind of racing, you know, kind of a racing heart. And so this is a practice that really helps me if I'm feeling a certain way. You know, we all have the habit of, like, identifying with what we're feeling and identifying with our thoughts. And so just starting it with, so this is whatever it is, and then feeling, okay, this is what it is in the body. And there it is again, my friend, and my little engine that couldn't. So we, mindfulness, as I was saying, brings us to insight. And so the Buddha talked about this three truths of reality, the first one being dukkha. So dukkha is suffering. It's often talked about as also dissatisfaction. So we have just this basic condition of life that brings suffering. But somehow or another, we have this, in a sense, this delusion that we should be living in a kind of Shangri-La here, that, you know, life should be free of suffering. So we get sick and, we don't like being sick. We don't like being uncomfortable. If we chose vanilla ice cream, we should have chosen the chocolate one instead, or maybe it was Chunky Monkey or something. But we're so often in this place of resisting the fact that suffering or dissatisfaction is just a basic component in life. And so the problem that we have is basically resistance. I used to be a Star Trekkie, and one of the things that they said in many of the episodes was resistance is futile. So, but we keep on just employing all this resistance. So mindfulness is, you know, we're always going to lose mindfulness, but it's about recognizing that we've lost our ability to, you know, sort of like, here we are, we're fighting against what's happening. But it's recognizing just the resistance and then applying mindfulness, which is like, okay, you know, this is suffering. And so the antidote to resistance is then acceptance. Again, acceptance meaning in mindfulness, just being with it. So it's very curious about acceptance, because acceptance is that capacity to turn towards. It's the exact opposite to, you know, we think that we should avoid discomfort. I mean, you know, why would we ever like want to put ourselves in this uncomfortable situation? Like when I was talking about mindfulness of the body, and if we're feeling uncomfortable, well, what we're trained to do in the mindfulness meditation is actually go to that very point of the tension. And we do this also in life. We go where it's uncomfortable. So I have this this little finger cuff, and it's used in acceptance and commitment therapy. ACT, Stephen Hayes developed it as a way of demonstrating this resistance. So you know, you put your fingers in the finger cuff, and if you try to get out, I mean, the natural tendency is to try to pull your way out. But, you know, what's happening is that the harder I'm pulling, the actual more stuck I'm becoming. And so, I'll do this in my classes, and I've actually had people break the finger. I almost broke it right now. So mindfulness teaches us to actually turn, to move towards. So if I go towards, I'm actually getting more space and can so easily get my fingers out of the finger cuff. So this is a very important part of the practice. It's that ability to turn toward what we resist. There's a lot of different ways that this is also explained. One way is that if you're driving on ice, you turn towards the skid in order to gain control. I always remember when I was being taught to ski, you're inclined to kind of go back to slow down, and that just speeds you up, and then you lose your grounding, but you move actually forward. And if you are in a river and you go down, and you fall into like a waterfall, if you try to swim up, the force of the water just keeps you right there. So you actually dive further down into the water. And once you're released from that force, you just pop right up. So resistance is the provocation that gets us to shut down, but acceptance is that invitation to open up. So that second truth of reality is anicca, which is impermanence. So life is constantly changing, but we have this way of wanting it to be the same because it feels unstable when things change, and we have a sense of insecurity when we want to be perceived a certain way, and we sort of get it right, and then something happens, and there it is again. We don't measure up, or we've lost the job or whatever. So our fight against the fact that everything changes causes a tremendous amount of suffering. So mindfulness, again, teaches us to look at when we're resisting that basic nature of impermanence, to kind of open up and just be with that shifting sand or that kind of earthquake motion of everything changing. And then the last one, in terms of the third truth of reality, is this notion of no self, anatta. And so we have this this way of perceiving ourselves as needing to be solid and very kind of our ego is like these assumptions of what we believe we should be like, and so so we oftentimes find ourselves not meeting our expectations because we have this kind of desire to be perfect, and again, because life brings suffering, it also brings the state of imperfection, also the impermanence, and so we're not perfect, but we try to be. I mean, that group brings us just a tremendous, tremendous amount of dis-ease. And so mindfulness says that it's really the illusion or this delusion of this separate self. There is no like me, my, or I. There's this no self, this ever-fluctuating flow of experience. And so when we can get in touch with this more flow of experience, we're able to recognize that down deep we can access our original goodness or what's called our Buddha nature, that even though we have all of our inadequacies or imperfections, we're already whole and complete as we are. And when we can access that, when we can get out of our defensive kind of armor, then we recognize this whole and complete self, and we can sort of dissolve this fictitious border between ourselves and others and kind of enter into the state of we-ness or being part of the world. So this quote is, in the very process of knowing self, you lose self and gain the world. And so basically what that's saying is that in the process of knowing self, you understand that you're this ever-fluctuating flow of experience, and you gain self. You lose self, meaning that you lose that attachment to the ego, and you gain the world. You're a part of, and you're much bigger, and you're part of the whole. So I just want to end this talk with just having a few minutes left for questions and answers with this one last saying, and. This is zero. So when we look at zero, we see nothing. But when we look through it, we can see the world. And so mindfulness is so much about being able to see through, not trying to fix, get rid of, but see through. And when we can do that, then we can see the world and openly be present for ourselves, for one another, and for the experience of being alive. So, are there any questions?
Do you mind repeating discussion about the study, the left brain, right brain study that you mentioned.
Sure. So Richie Davidson, University of Wisconsin, is a big researcher in mindfulness, and he looks very much at a lot of things, but the right in the brain, in the left brain hemisphere, as having different functions. And so he divided the employees in this high-tech firm in Wisconsin into these two groups, a waitlist control for an 8-week MBSR course and the actual people who were going to be doing the MBSR course. Everyone's brains were scanned at the beginning, before anyone took the course. And what he saw on the MRI scan was that the brain was tipped to the right, meaning that there was more brain activity in this brain hemisphere towards the right of the brain. And the right brain hemisphere is known to have more of where the negative emotions reside. So then the first group went through the MBSR class. Everyone's brains were scanned again, and the group that went through the MBSR class, their more brain activity was now shifted to the left, which is where more positive emotions reside. The weightless control, they hadn't taken the class yet. They stayed on the right side of the brain. So it was an example of how MBSR in this case, but there's been so much research on MBSR or mindfulness meditation or different kinds of meditation, can actually change the structure and the function of the brain. So there is time for maybe one really short question.
Uh-huh.
What is the N in RAIN? The N in RAIN? Oh, that's right. I don't think I said the N. So it was R is recognize, A is accept or allow, I is investigate, and N is non-identify. So it's not identifying with the thought. That's what I was talking about with applying the neutral attention, and you see a thought, and I am not my thought. This is. Okay. Well, let's just end with a 10 breaths. So I'll ring the chime. So this is the chime of mindfulness. So whenever you hear this chime, it's the reminder to come back to yourself, to come back to the present moment, and be in mindfulness. Well, thank you, everyone.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.